We'll be looking today at 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 13 through 21. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we'll begin reading in verse 13, and we will read and study through to the remainder of the chapter in verse 21. As Paul begins to wind down this second letter, he really opens up his heart. And as he opens up his heart, he pours out his feelings. He shows how hurt he is. He shows his frustration with these people. And as he pours out his feelings, he does use sarcasm, because sometimes the situation calls for it. Now, as Christians, we should not be sarcastic as a rule. We ought to be kind, and even if we have to rebuke somebody, we usually have no reason to be sarcastic. Sarcasm should only be used when people are so stubborn, or so mean, or so dishonest, that it's the only way to truly get their attention. And this means that sometimes in the Bible, you're going to read about the prophets of God, for instance, using sarcasm with certain people. For instance, in 1 Kings 22, verse 15, Micaiah, the prophet of God, was talking to King Ahab. Ahab was a wicked man, and the king asked Micaiah if he should go to a certain place, Ramoth-Gilead, to battle. Now, Micaiah knew that Ahab was dishonest. He knew that Ahab wasn't going to listen to him anyway, and so he answered him sarcastically. He said, "Go up, for the Lord will deliver it into the hand of the king." That was not literal. That was a sarcastic answer to a mean, stubborn man. In 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 27, we see another example. There we read about Elijah mocking the prophets of Baal. Those prophets of Baal were dishonest, and so Elijah mocked them. And then we find Jesus himself in Matthew 23, verse 24, using a tinge of sarcasm when he said to the scribes and the Pharisees, "You blind guides, which strain at a gnat, but swallow a camel." So Paul got to this point in dealing with these Corinthians. I don't mean that the Corinthians were exactly on the same level of stubbornness or dishonesty as the scribes and Pharisees and other people, but they were being stubborn. And if it sounds like that Paul is being harsh or abrasive, remember the background. Paul put 1.5 years of his life into this church. He labored among them, and he loved these people. He chose to work rather than be paid by them, and yet apparently they criticized him and looked down on him for this. They unfairly criticized Paul about his appearance and his speaking ability, but Paul kept trying. So Paul felt like that they had pushed him to the point that he needed to be somewhat sarcastic with them. That's why he said in verse 11 of chapter 12, "You have compelled me." In other words, Paul felt like that they had pushed him to this point. So now, beginning in verse 13, we're going to see several statements like this. And remember, these are not to be taken literally. They're to be taken with a tinge of sarcasm in the background and the context that we've described. So let's begin in verse 13 with rebuke number one. Paul said, "For what is it wherein you were inferior to other churches, except it be that I myself was not burdensome to you? Forgive me this wrong." Paul is saying, how are you less than other churches except in this one way? And that is, in the fact that you didn't pay me as a preacher. Usually, churches did pay the preacher that was working for them, but we know that Paul didn't accept that pay at Corinth. And then Paul gives a rebuke, and it has a tinge of sarcasm. He says, "Forgive me this wrong." That's some mild sarcasm. Paul is saying, if you think it was so bad for me to do this when I was only trying to help the cause, then forgive me. Then in verse 14, we come to rebuke number two. Paul said, "Behold, the third time I am ready to come to you." That is, this is the third time that he had decided and got ready and prepared to go to Corinth. But we know, as he showed in chapters 1 and 2, that he had intended to go the second time. He was ready to go the second time, but he changed his plan for their benefit. So this time again, he says, I don't want to be a burden to you people. He said, I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours. That is, I don't seek what you have. I'm not trying to get anything out of you, but I seek you. That is, I'm trying to do good for you. I'm trying to benefit you. And then he uses this illustration. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. Paul says parents ought to lay up for their children. That is, parents, obviously, ought to provide for their children. Paul said in 1 Timothy 5, verse 8, if any provide not for his own, specially for they of his own house, he has denied the faith and is worse than an infidel. So it is a naturally understood principle that parents ought to provide for their children. In a spiritual sense, Paul was like a father to these Corinthians. And so Paul said, I'm not going to be burdensome to you. He said, because it's not right for the children to lay up for the parents. And then when we come to verse 15, we find rebuke number 3. Paul said, and I will very gladly spend and be spent for you. Paul said, I'm very glad to do this without pay. And I'm glad to do it for you, for your sake. And Paul said, I'm very glad to do it. He didn't do it grudgingly. He didn't resent going to these people and not being paid and helped by them. Although he did say, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. The more Paul loved these people, the less they loved him. It reminds us of some people today. The more you do for them, the less they appreciate it. And Paul said that those Corinthians were like that. The more I do for you, the less you seem to appreciate it. And so in verse 16, he continues his rebukes. He says in verse 16, but be it so, I did not burden you. Nevertheless, being crafty, I caught you with guile. Now, this is a passage that can be easily misunderstood unless we remember the context. And the context is what we've been talking about. Here we find some real sarcasm. These people knew that Paul was not speaking literally here in verse 16. They knew that Paul was not actually saying that he deceived them literally any more than he had literally robbed other churches. Remember, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 8, Paul said, I robbed other churches, taking wages of them to do you service. Well, obviously, he's speaking there figuratively. He's not talking literally. He's certainly not saying that he stole. And he's certainly not saying here in verse 16 that he was literally deceitful with these people. He said, I did not burden you. That is, I did not receive pay from you and make myself a burden to you. But he said, nevertheless, being crafty, I caught you with guile. Now, that's what his critics at Corinth evidently were saying about him. That's what they had charged him with. And the situation evidently was this. When Paul was there for a year and a half preaching to these people at Corinth, he did not receive pay from the church at Corinth. He said that he did not want to be a burden to them, and he felt like that if he had been paid by them, it might hinder the gospel. But he did tell the church at Corinth that they were to give on the first day of the week, that they were to store up what they gave, and then he was going to send Titus and some other brothers to come by and get that gift that they had laid up or stored up so that they could help the poor saints at Jerusalem. So evidently what happened was that there were some members of the church at Corinth who said that Paul just tricked them, that he was coming up with a backdoor way to get the money, that he didn't take the money while he was there with them, but after he left, he told these brethren to come by and to receive their gift. And they were insinuating, evidently, that Paul was going to get some of that. So his critics were saying something like this. Sure, he didn't take any money from us while he was preaching here, but he tricked us. He got it in another way, by having us to take up this big collection for the saints in Jerusalem, and then sending some of these men to come by and get that money. So they were apparently insinuating that there was something shady with what Paul was telling them. So Paul continues in verse 17 through 19. He said, did I make a gain of you? by any of them whom I sent unto you? Now, he's talking about what he's described in chapter 8, especially of this book. Remember that he said that he was sending Titus and these other brothers, and that they were coming to receive that gift and take it to Jerusalem? Well, there were some people at Corinth that had suspicions that Paul had something up his sleeve, and that Paul was being greedy about this, and that he was taking advantage of them. Paul said in verse 17, "Did I make a gain of you? Did I take advantage of you by those people that I sent to Corinth?" In verse 18, he said, "I desired Titus, and with him I sent a brother." Now, that's what he's talking about in chapter 8 of this book. So he asked these people the question, "Did Titus make a gain of you?" That is, did Titus take advantage of you? Did he use any of that money or take any of that money for himself? Walked we not in the same spirit? Walked we not in the same steps? Again, verse 19, "Think ye that we excuse ourselves unto you?" Do you think that we have to prove ourselves to you? Do you think that we have to defend ourselves to you? He says, "We speak before God in Christ." Paul is saying, we don't have to clear ourselves to you. We are answerable to God Almighty. God is the judge. But for your benefit, he says, we do all things, dearly beloved, for your edifying. So even though Paul didn't have to go through all this with these people and explain himself, he said, "I'm doing it for your good and for your spiritual welfare." So Paul was going the second mile, and as we would say, he's bending over backward to try to help these people, even though they really don't appreciate it like they should. So in verses 20 and 21, Paul says, "For I fear, lest when I come..." So Paul says, "I'm afraid that when I get there, some things might happen." What is it that Paul is afraid of that might happen when he gets to Corinth? He tells us. He says, "I fear, first of all, that I shall not find you such as I would." In other words, Paul is saying, "I'm afraid that you're not going to be doing right and living right like you should be, like I want you to or expect you to." And also he said, "And that I shall be found unto you such as ye would not." Now that means that Paul is afraid that when he gets there, he's going to have to be more firm, and he's going to have to be more stern with these people than he would like to be, and that they would certainly want him to be. So Paul is saying, "I'm afraid when I get there to Corinth that I may not like what I see in that church." And he's saying, "You may not like what you see in me either when I get there." Because he says there may be debates, envyings, wraths, strifes, backbitings, whisperings, swellings, and tumults. Paul says, "I'm afraid that when I get there, you won't be acting right and that there might be a lot of problems in the church at Corinth." And in verse 21, he said, "I fear also, that is, lest when I come again, my God will humble me among you and that I shall bewail many." Paul says, "I'm afraid that when I get there, I'm going to have to weep and I'm going to have to deal with your sin. And in that way, I'm going to be humbled among you because," he says, "of many which have sinned already and have not repented of the uncleanness and fornication and lasciviousness which they have committed." So we find in the book of 2 Corinthians that some of these Christians were doing better. We find that some of these people had repented. In particular, we find the man that was guilty of fornication had repented according to chapter 2. But Paul shows here that he was afraid that there were others that were guilty who still had not repented. And Paul is saying that he was not looking forward to dealing with those people.